VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. Ladies and gentlemen, vaccination legislation is on the move. The National Vaccine Information Center reports a record number of vaccine-related pieces of legislation were introduced across 40 states and Washington, D.C. in 2019. Some of those battles they fought were won by their perspective, some were lost, some are looming as we speak. And this year of 2020, likely to be a crucial year in the United States for medical choice, parental consent, religious freedom, open debate, and constitutionally guaranteed free speech. And what about this coronavirus? Well, we've got a lot to pack into our program today. Here to discuss this with us is Barbara Lowe Fisher, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity co-founded with parents of DPT, a vaccine-injured children in 1982, for nearly 40 years has led this national grassroots movement public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms, informed consent protections in the public health system. She has researched, analyzed, publicly articulated the major issues involved in the science, policy, law, ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the subject. She's co-author of DPT, A Shot in the Dark, and author of The Consumer's Guide to Childhood Vaccines, Vaccines, Autism, and Chronic Inflammation, The New Epidemic, and Reforming Vaccine Policy and Law, A Guide. Barbara, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Well, thank you for having me back.
I'd like to talk about this wave of legislation that's been introduced in 2019, more to come in the new year. And I know some of these expand individual liberty, others take it away. And before we talk about those types of legislation being introduced, what is causing the wave to take place? What's driving it?
Well, I think that the pharmaceutical, medical trade, and public health lobby it has become much stronger in the last decade, certainly after the Supreme Court basically eliminated all existing liability from the vaccine manufacturers. We've seen a full court press in the states beginning in 2011, 2012, to try to take away all exemptions because they know that the people are becoming more educated about this issue. Everybody in the country now has heard about this, and this was not the case, you know, almost 40 years ago when I started this work. Very few people had heard of this issue. Everyone knows about it now. And so as we have a greater awareness among the people, and as more people experience vaccine reactions, either themselves or their children, the whole issue of whether or not we're going to have the right in this country to make informed voluntary decisions about vaccine use has been put on the front burner in state legislatures. And we have a real divide in our country. We have people who absolutely support the right to informed consent, which has been defined as a human right. That is, that you have the right to have full information about all medical interventions, including use of pharmaceutical products, and be able to make a voluntary decision about whether or not you or your minor child will use that product or undergo that medical intervention. And then you have other people who say, but for the greater good, some people are expendable in order to have the entire society protected from these infectious diseases through the mass forced use of vaccines. Of course, the issue is not so black and white. There are a lot of things that go into and analyzing why it's a bad idea to pass laws forcing everyone to use a pharmaceutical product that in this country is liability-free as of 2011. And when you have nobody accountable in a civil court of law, when someone is harmed by that product, nobody who licenses it or who develops it and profits through selling it, nobody who votes to mandate it, nobody who gives it, nobody is accountable for what happens when you have a reaction and either are permanently injured or die. And so it becomes even more important for the people in this country to stand up and defend the right to make voluntary decisions about use of these vaccine products.
Yeah, and indeed, but I was disturbed by a story. WND.com reported a couple weeks ago, you likely had it as well, that the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, they've joined in this lawsuit alleging Adam Schiff, who's at the center of the impeachment debate right now, abused government power. They allege that and infringed on their free speech rights. It's stated in this article that early last year, he contacted Google, Facebook, Amazon, using his authority as a member of Congress, told them to deplatform or discredit what he claimed was inaccurate information about vaccines. And then a short time later, WND.com boasted that showed that he was boasting on his website that these companies caved to his demands.
Oh, that was a big story last year. We were right in the middle of that. We had a lot of people who had showed up for public hearings on the measles outbreak in New York and in several other states. And yes, he had sent these letters to Google, to Jeff Bezos at Amazon, to in other words, the big social media platforms, and like Amazon, of course, is the biggest bookseller in the world, and told them that they needed to clamp down on what he termed fake news and misinformation. And Amazon pulled films that had been done in the past, including Vaxxed and The Greater Good, which NBC was featured in 2011, and pulled down books that they said were detrimental. And we also have corporations like NewsGuard that are basically pharma funded, and other they are judges of what is fake news and should be suppressed. And we're seeing active suppression online on social media platforms of any information that does not conform to the World Health Organization or Centers for Disease Control government position on vaccines, with vaccine safety. So if you criticize vaccine safety, if you criticize one-size-fits-all vaccine policies, you can be termed a fake news disseminator and punished, basically, by having your information censored.
Well, let's get into this, the various types of legislation going on in just a broad number of states right now. Some 40 states have got action going on. But the first I'd like you to address is legislation that would bring about mandates codifying all CDC-recommended vaccines, not only now, but in the future.
Yes. In Virginia, we just were in the legislature at hearings week before last, a terrible bill that would automatically codify into Virginia state law all current ACIP-recommended vaccines for children. That's all 69 doses of 16 vaccines, although I think they've modified the legislation now and say, well, we're not going to have them have to take a flu shot every year. But basically all the other vaccinations. And also in the future, whenever ACIP recommends a vaccine in the future, and there are hundreds of vaccines that are being developed, 13 of them are on a fast track to licensure, all those vaccines would automatically be codified into Virginia state law without any public hearings, any discussion by the health department, any input from the people to their legislators. In other words, what the legislators want to do is they want to abandon their constitutional authority to make public health law when it comes to vaccines and hand it over to an unelected committee at the CDC. The ACIP committee is appointed by the CDC, and have them be the ones to make law on vaccination in Virginia. So we, of course, many parents showed up and testified. We testified against it because this is inappropriate for a state to be turning over their constitutional authority to the federal government.
Wow. And coupled with this, that we're seeing also a wave of those that are trying pieces of legislation to remove objections or exemptions to vaccinations. Tell us what's happening there.
Yes. we have that would last year they really came out in force and tried to introduce bills in a number of states that would take away the religious and philosophical or conscientious belief exemptions. Last year, Maine eliminated both religious and conscience exemptions, although on March 3rd of this year, there will be a ballot referendum where people in Maine can vote to overturn that new law. And I hope everybody turns out who is a registered voter in Maine to try to repeal that bad law. We also saw the New York eliminate in a very hotly contested, high-profile argument in that legislature. We saw New York eliminate the religious exemption to vaccination and to force doctors to adhere to the contraindications of the CDC when giving a medical exemption. We have thousands of children out on the street in New York, many of them disabled, many of them vaccine injured, who require special education, whose parents cannot give them more vaccines, and because they're afraid that they will be further injured or die.
Mm-hmm.
And those children are not able to go to school in New York because of this draconian legislation that was passed in New York last year.
Right, go ahead.
California also restricted physicians from giving medical exemptions unless they adhered to the CDC contraindications, which are almost none. Almost nothing now qualifies as a medical reason to withhold vaccination. So 99.99% of all Americans under the CDC guidelines are candidates for vaccination.
Why would they be negating the word from medical doctors who know their patients, they know reactions, they know what kinds of systems are hitting them, who have given medical exemptions to them? Why would they negate the word from medical doctors on this?
Because they do not want medical doctors to exercise their own professional judgment or conscience in giving a child a medical exemption. The goal is, this is the goal of the federal government, the federal health officials, and of pharmaceutical companies, that in this country, everyone will be vaccinated. Everyone, with all the government-recommended vaccines. There will be no exceptions. They truly have embraced the utilitarian rationale that some can be sacrificed for the rest. When you do that, it is such a slippery slope because you bother to find out how many you're sacrificing to begin with. They're trying to write off every time a vaccine reaction occurs that it's bad genes. It's the person's fault. It's not the vaccine's fault. Vaccine reactions are only that end in injury or death, say the government, are one in a million. It is absolutely an attempt to downplay the significance of what the people are experiencing all over this country, and that is that vaccine reactions are way more than one in a million. But if they get laws passed in the states that don't allow you to make an informed voluntary decision, eliminate all the exemptions, force you to get every federally recommended vaccine, force the physicians to adhere to these very narrow medical contraindications, it's tyranny.
Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today on Crosstalk. A quick break, and we're going to come back to address these issues further, including the other types of laws that are making their way through states as we speak. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did plants evolve?
Chris, according to evolution, both plants and animals evolved from an original single-cell organism which itself came from non-living chemicals. If you look in a book on plant evolution, you'll see many references to plants changing into other types. But when you look for the evidence, you'll be disappointed. Now, there is a lot of evidence that plants have varied over the years, but did they evolve from something else? We have lots of different kinds of algae and ferns and flowering plants, but no clue that any of these basic categories evolved from another. Each were created separately, just like it says in Scripture. In Genesis, we read that God created each basic type after their kind, not by changing one kind into another. Face it, Chris, evolution didn't happen. Now creation, that happened. And we read about that when we go back to Genesis.
Thanks, Dr. Morris. This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us today from the National Vaccine Information Center, and what they are advocating for is informed voluntary consent. We're talking about some of the issues going on by way of legislation that's been on the move across the nation. Certainly, we've seen the issue. Some are pushing for the requirement for all CDC-recommended vaccines, not only now, but ones that they would pass in the future and as recommended for people to have. Also doing away with the removal of exemptions, whether it be that of religious or conscience objections, doing away with medical exemptions. That's showing up in a number of states right now. And another wave, we understand, Barbara, is that of minors being able to give consent to vaccinations even if their parents object.
Yeah, that first bill was last year in Washington, D.C., that a child of any age could consent to vaccination without the parents' knowledge or consent. Very, very dangerous, because we know from the medical literature that children's brains, they are not developed enough to be able to make good benefit-risk decisions. And so why you would have legislation that would go around parents and allow these children of any age to get vaccinated? They put a limit on the bill that they introduced in Virginia, which has been withdrawn, to have it be 14 years of older. There is, I understand, a bill in Wisconsin that is going to be introduced, mm-hmm, that is going to say 16 years or older, children can consent to vaccination without their parents' knowledge. We also have in Wisconsin the dentists, a bill that's probably going to be introduced, that dentists can give children over 6 years of age any vaccine.
And that's the other type of issue that's going on, is to just really broaden those who can give the vaccinations. As you mentioned, right now, legislation coming in our state of Wisconsin to authorize dentists to start giving vaccinations, but others are looking for other people in the health care fields to also give such vaccinations.
Yes, ophthalmologists, anybody who is a medical worker, basically would become a vaccinator. That seems to be where they're heading. There's also what we call school shaming bills, where they want legislation passed that would publicly post vaccination rates and exemption rates. That bill, another bill was introduced in Virginia, which has been withdrawn, is my understanding. And of course, this is really sort of silly, because you can have a fully vaccinated classroom. You can still have infection transmitted, because these, for example, with pertussis, you can be fully vaccinated, you can still get infected and not be symptomatic and transmit to other people. You don't always have to be symptomatic in order to transmit infections to other people, whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated. Or you can show very few symptoms. And in fact, with vaccinated people, there often is an atypical presentation of illness that's not diagnosed or reported. So it appears as if the unvaccinated people, who usually express fully the signs and symptoms of disease, it looks like they're the only ones who are getting sick and are spreading disease. That's not true. And that we've seen it with pertussis, measles, and many other infections, certainly with influenza. Influenza vaccine is notoriously ineffective. For the last 15 years, it's been less than 50% effective, according to the CDC. You can get vaccinated, and you can get infected and transmit to other people, showing no or few symptoms, which is why it's kind of ludicrous to say that all the healthcare workers must get vaccinated. You're much better off if you're not, and if you fully express the symptoms, you stay home. Mm-hmm. You stay home when you're sick. You don't show up at work vaccinated and sick.
I found it very interesting. You just reported last week through NVAC that hundreds of healthcare workers in Massachusetts, including those in nursing homes and kidney dialysis centers, they're declining the free annual flu shots. What's happening?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, healthcare workers tend to be pretty savvy about the side effects of vaccines because they give them and they also get them. And they know how ineffective the influenza vaccine is. They also know that there are risks. In fact, under the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986, all federally recommended vaccines for children, and if those vaccines are given to adults, like influenza vaccines, they're covered under the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. Most of the awards now that are being given in the compensation program run by the federal government are for influenza vaccine injuries. A lot of them are adults. So adult healthcare workers they understand the risks and failures of influenza vaccine, and they're pushing back. They're pushing back. They don't want to take it.
But a number will say that, well, even though it's not 100% effective, it's going to lighten symptoms should you get the flu. Does it?
Well, that may be true, but what does that do for transmission? The whole point of forcing people to get vaccinated is because they're saying, well, you don't have the right to not vaccinate because you can transmit to other people. Well, if the vaccines are not working like influenza vaccine, that doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
If you want to get an influenza vaccine, you should be able to do that. But you should understand completely that it may not totally protect you or protect you from transmitting the disease. That's why this must be an individual choice. We must have the right to say yes or no to products that can both fail to work and also can cause injury. And the research has not been done to identify who is at higher risk. They refuse to do this research, which is why I have a real problem with the morality of these laws. It seems to me very immoral. If you aren't even trying to find out who's at risk so you can spare their lives, to force everybody to take it when you can't tell who is going to be harmed.
You talked about
there's something very wrong with this forced vaccination policy from my perspective.
Mm-hmm. You talked earlier about school shaming, and I saw also, though, that you've got a story on your site that really caught my attention, and it concerns this new technology that will actually record a person's vaccination history right on their own body. What's happening?
Yeah, that's a technology one of the things they want to do is really be able to streamline the vaccination process all over the world. And to do that, they have to create vaccines. They're creating patch vaccines. They're creating inhaled vaccines, nanoparticle vaccines. All these are genetically engineered. And they want an easier way to keep track of who is vaccinated and who is not. And so one of the companies has developed a way of having it's a dye that goes into your arm or into your hand that will have your vaccination record on it, and it can be seen from a cell phone. You can scan whether or not. And of course, this would be very useful in third world countries where paper files and electronic files are not as easily administered, or, you know, oversight on who has the vaccines and who doesn't.
Hmm.
So there are a lot of really interesting things that are coming
up
that are being developed with the use of technology, and one of them is to be able to scan your vaccination record that will basically be under your skin.
And some people are quite alarmed by that, Barbara. I'd like to mention, let's get out your website information, because, I mean, you report there was a record 221 vaccine pieces of legislation introduced in 40 states and D.C. in 2019. There's more that's coming down the channels here this year as well. We cannot possibly go state by state, but you do this on a website where people can actually look up their state and see what's happening by way of vaccinations, and I'm seeing a whole lot of places where you're sounding the alarm bell.
Yeah, right now, if the website is nvicadvocacy.org, NVIC for National Vaccine Information Center, and I'm looking right now, action needed now, Colorado, Washington, D.C., Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Washington State, Wyoming. We have the bills that are moving now at the top, and then bills to watch, because a bill can move at any time, and it can go really quickly in your legislature, depending upon what your rules are in your legislature. I would advise everyone to, it's free, it's a free online portal that we offer as a public service. We want people to be engaged in the states with their legislators. You can look up your state. In fact, when you become a user of the portal, a registered user of the portal, what you can do is when you go to your state page, you see your own legislator, your own state, and also federal legislators. And with one click of the mouse, you can be put in touch electronically with your own state legislator, and you can make your voice heard. So, and we send out, you'll also receive email alerts when legislation is moving in your state, and guidelines for talking to your legislator and talking points. So it's a very valuable resource. In fact, we know that health journalists are come on this website because it's a great resource.
Again, folks, that's NVIC. That stands for National Vaccine Information Center, NVICAdvocacy.org. Their main site, NVIC.org, but NVICAdvocacy.org. And you'll find the listing of states, and it's very handy to zip down. You can see the bill numbers, what the legislation does, and its impact. And it's a very helpful guide in that regard, NVICAdvocacy.org. Barbara, I'd like to talk about this coronavirus coming out of China. We understand there's just a massive undertaking that's going on right now to develop a vaccine for this virus. Some have said it's months down the road. Others saying it's significantly longer than that. Millions now under quarantine right now in China. We're told this is the largest quarantine in history. We know cases are showing up now in the United States, over 100 currently being watched now in the U.S. Your comments on this coronavirus and efforts underway?
Well, I know this morning I saw that there have been about 2,700 confirmed coronavirus cases in China with 80 deaths confirmed. And as you said, they suspect thousands more have been infected. It's interesting. Every January and February, we seem to have a major national or global public health emergency. It's very interesting that it's always in January, February, most of the time. There's a lot of talk. This is a coronavirus is like the MERS and SARS viruses. It's acute respiratory symptoms, like a viral pneumonia, and quite a high mortality rate. It's a zoonotic virus, which means it can be transmitted between animals and humans. The narrative right now is that somehow bats and snakes that were sold in a market in Wuhan, China, are somehow... the virus, whatever they were carrying, got into humans. There are other people who are a little skeptical about that narrative.
Tell you what, we're going to come back on the skeptical side of this. And folks, we're also going to open our phone lines. If you'd like to get online with our guest here today with questions you may have regarding the vaccinations and the legislation that's on the move, our number 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk. We'll be right back.
Is it okay to abort a baby? What would you say? People give many reasons why abortion is an acceptable choice, including the inconvenience of pregnancy, infant disabilities. It's the woman's body. It's not a baby. This is a result of rape or incest, incompetence of parents, and she's not ready to be a parent. In the DVD, 7 Reasons, Ray Comfort addresses these 7 questions, reasoning with college students and people on the street about whether such objections are justified. You will see those who are ardently pro-choice change their mind in moments. It's compelling and convincing. This powerful 42-minute DVD, 7 Reasons, is available for a donation of just $5. 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the DVD, 7 Reasons.
I'm over that, but I've got 10 pollen...
Stand by. We're live here today with Barbara Lowe Fisher with us here today on Crosstalk. Our phone lines are open here at 800-733-9829. And taking your calls here today on Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. And Barbara, we were just talking about this coronavirus here, and saw that the issue you're talking about being passed from animals to humans, but there's also talk about there being a biosecurity issue going on. What's news out there on this issue?
Well, you know, in January 2018, China's first maximum security virology laboratory to study dangerous pathogens opened in Wuhan. And there have been a number of reports over the last decade, both here and internationally, that these biosecurity labs or biohazard labs with very high security were not as secure as they should be. And there have been a number of biosecurity breaches. And I think that it's right for people to look closely whether or not was this really a jump from in a marketplace that had bats and snakes, was it a jump from animals to humans, or is there something more here where they were experimenting with creation of viruses, and because we know that's happening, viruses to have them become more lethal in order to try to figure out how they would make a vaccine. It is true that a vaccine for this coronavirus is on fast track. There will be millions of dollars that are appropriated, just like there were millions of dollars appropriated for the Zika virus back in 2016, which we don't really hear much about anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting issue, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Let's go to Wayne in Idaho. Wayne, you're on the air. Hello, Wayne.
Yeah,
you're
I just want to know, I'm listening to the vaccine program by the Gail. I missed her name.
Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest. Talk. Wayne, you're on the air. Please go ahead with your question.
Oh, no, I don't have a question. I just want to know if I can get a CD, CD of this whole program. I didn't know if you'd put me on.
Yes, you can. And you just call our main switchboard at 800-729-9829. Al in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hi, I was calling about, like Barbara talked about, that coronavirus. There's a website I read an article on last night called knowledgeofhealth.com, and the gentleman described that virus, as she did, as similar to a common cold. So I don't know, like, these people that have passed away, you know, are they infants, younger, are they elderly, whose immune systems, you know, could be compromised or not fully developed? So I think there's just a lot of hype about this, and, you know, we don't know all what's going on over there either.
Okay. Barbara?
I think the reports are that many of them are elderly, and you're right that certainly a viral pneumonia, this looks a lot like a viral pneumonia, and elderly have a very hard time with pneumonia because their immune systems do not respond as effectively as younger people. And so I think that this looks like it's a pretty nasty virus, but where did it come from? I think that's once they find out really the characteristics of it and what it is, because they can't make a vaccine until they really understand what this virus is.
Yeah, a lot of unanswered questions at this point. Thank you for the call. Kevin is next in Maple Ridge. You're on the air.
Thank you. Could you tell me what autism is?
Well, we're talking about vaccinations here today, Kevin, but let me turn the question here, Barbara. I know that this is something that has been denied, that there's any link between autism and vaccinations. What has your research shown on this?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of outstanding questions about all the causes of autism. There's a wide variety of symptoms that are now known to be part of the autism spectrum disorder. And one of the things that a lot of the children have is brain inflammation, inflammation in their bodies, in the gastrointestinal tracts, etc. Vaccines can cause inflammation in the body, particularly in the brain, when there are complications of vaccination. So this is one reason why I think the whole issue of the connection between autism and vaccines is not going to go away. There needs to be a lot more research done into what are the markers for autism, for children with autism, not only genetic and epigenetic, but also looking at allergies, looking at autoimmunity. There's so much that needs to be known about human health. Doctors often pretend like they know everything, but they really don't. And so it's good. I think in the next 20 years, we're going to see a lot of emerging information coming. And I think the jury is still out about whether or not vaccines cause autism. I don't think the science is settled at all.
Dana is our next caller. Dana, you're on the air.
Yes, I was curious. I work at the post office, and on Mondays, we get shipment directly from China, and we process that mail, and it's in their bags. It's shipped right from China. Now, is there any threat to us as employees here, or is it just human to human?
No, it's my understanding that this is transmitted just like other types of respiratory viruses are transmitted, and that is from person-to-person contact, coughing, and being in direct contact with someone. I have no information that this is could be transmitted through on paper or you know, someone coughing on paper and coming through the mail. I don't think that's true.
Great. Thank you for the call. And Barbara, this really begs the whole issue of good hygiene habits as well, does it not? Hand washing and so forth?
Actually, the Centers for Disease Control are saying that the most important thing you can do is the old-fashioned advice of hand washing, and that's true during the flu season. It's true really all year around.
Mm-hmm.
Hand washing is an old, tried and true interrupter of transmission of disease.
Does the wearing of surgical masks adequately protect the population?
You know, I've seen a lot of surgical masks being worn by people in China. I saw that during the swine flu influenza pandemic in 2009. Whether or not, I know that certainly healthcare workers who don't vaccinate are required to wear masks during the time that they're in patient contact during the flu season. It seems logical to me that coughing, droplets in the air, if you've got a mask on, you're not going to be coughing into the air because you have a mask on. Whether or not that mask is going to protect you from people who are coughing entirely protect you, I don't know. I guess it depends upon the mask.
Our telephone number, 800-733-9829. Brad is our next caller in West Dallas. You're on the air, Brad.
Hey, Brother Jim. Your guest mentioned how the vaccines in the last, I think she said 15 years, have an overall effectiveness rate of under 50%.
That's a flu vaccination.
Oh, the flu. Influenza. I was just going to mention about the flu vac. I remember a few years back, I forget what year it was, but it was for the year when all was said and done, they said it had a grand total of 3% effectiveness. That's nothing to write home about. And besides, they'll never know how many people who got stuck with a needle would not have come down with the flu without the needle. So a lot of these people, like myself, I don't get it. I haven't had the flu since the early 80s. So anyway, if these vaccines worked and they were safe, we wouldn't be hearing about things like hiding the fact that you can still transmit the disease, use of government force, shaming, and things like that. The fact that we're hearing things like that tells me, don't get stuck and make sure nobody forces you to. I just have one question. I'll be done. To your guest, where are a lot of these vaccines made? Do you have any kind of percentage as to how many of these vaccines or bases for them are made offshore?
That's a very, very good question. And I don't think at this point in the 21st century we really know how much of the vaccine that is being given to Americans is being made offshore. One of the problems is the Freedom of Information Act was supposed to be for the people to be able to get information from the government on issues of importance to them. There is the Freedom of Information Act, however, that it shields Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Defense, and other agencies with the wording is, if it's in the interest of national security, you can't get it. Another reason to turn you down when you're trying to get information, like the kind that you're talking about, is if it would harm a company's patents, basically, if it, for privacy of the company, so that they're not unfairly, information is not unfairly divulged to their competitors, you can decline, the agencies can decline to give you information. So it's very difficult now because the CDC is basically positioning itself as a national security agency. So the HHS is. So, which is the CDC is under HHS. So it's very hard to get this information. I don't think we really know how much of the vaccine is being made offshore.
Wow. Great question. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
Brittany is our next caller. Hi, Brittany. You're on the air.
Hi. I am calling. Thank you so much for having this conversation. I really appreciate it. I'm calling because part of the my understanding of the religious exemption is that once upon a time there were aborted fetal cells in the vaccinations that were made way back when, and now that's no longer a thing. And so I'm wondering if you can speak to whether or not that is an appropriate reason to give for not allowing religious exemptions anymore for vaccinations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Are aborted fetal cells totally removed from vaccinations, Barbara?
No. No, they're not. And I think that, you know, probably the most famous one is the rubella vaccine, which was made from aborted fetal tissue, chickenpox vaccine, hepatitis A vaccine. There are a number of vaccines. And, you know, even though the Catholic Church has come out with a paper about a decade ago, I think, that said that Catholics could go ahead and get vaccinated, they also... There was another paper that said, but they have the right to follow their conscience with regard to vaccines made from aborted fetal tissue. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is a concern of a lot of people who are pro-life, and they don't like the idea of their children getting vaccines that are made from aborted fetal tissue. So I think it is something that needs to be discussed. But I believe the religious exemption, like the conscience exemption, needs to be part of our public health laws, because your human right to worship and to follow your religious beliefs and your human right to follow your conscience is extremely important to protect, and it should be respected in public health laws, including vaccine laws.
We need to take a quick break here, so callers online, you stay there because we'll be picking up your calls right after the break. Barbara Lowe Fisher is with us today from the National Vaccine Information Center. Again, I'd like to give you their websites, nvic.org, nvic.org, for information on so many of these issues, and then to find out specifically on legislation that's going on, not only in the states, but in Washington, D.C. as well, as far as the U.S. Capitol is concerned, you can go to their website, nvicadvocacy.org. That's nvicadvocacy.org. More calls after the break. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com, continuing our series on the dangers of discourse or dialogue with cultural Marxists. It's one thing to have a debate. It's another thing to have a discourse or dialogue which seeks to merge your worldview with theirs. Well, when you agree to this, you're agreeing to the sixth danger, which is you're agreeing with the cultural Marxist premise that discourse produces consensus which produces culturally acceptable values and thus politically correct behavior. Because after all, your worldview is based on your values. Your values are based on your conduct. right? So if you can convince people that truth is defined by the group, therefore values are defined by the majority, and now you'll conform your behavior to the cultural standards that are politically correct. Now, this is what happens when you involve yourself in a discourse or dialogue with the Marxist. Group consensus and peer pressure get you to change your values and then your conduct.
What's happening on so many state levels, folks? Vaccination legislation on the move. You can find out what's going on in your state specifically at nvicadvocacy.org. Let's go right back to the phone lines here. Andy's calling in from Verona, Missouri. You're on the air, Andy. Hello, Andy. Okay, then from Andy, let's go to John, who is calling in from Springfield. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, I've heard that a lot of the problem with the vaccine is this mercury and aluminum they put in these for some kind of stabilization purpose or something. I don't know if you guys talked about this earlier. I'm kind of late coming into the program. Okay. Can you tell me about that and why they put it in? And
sure.
Is that the main problem, or is it the vaccine itself, and what is it there for?
Thank you, John.
Well, aluminum, there are aluminum adjuvants, and adjuvants basically ram up the immune system to produce a very strong immune response to try to get artificial immunity from the vaccines, antibodies, vaccine-induced antibodies. Mercury, thimerosal, is put in as a preservative. As of the late 90s, early 2000s, most of the thimerosal has been taken out of the childhood vaccines, although the flu vaccine, most of it, does contain mercury. Aluminum adjuvants are in a lot of the vaccines, and there's been a lot of controversy about aluminum because aluminum is neurotoxic, just like mercury is neurotoxic. Now, the government claims that these are in such small amounts that it doesn't matter, that it doesn't do anything. But there's a lot of research that shows it does matter. The amount, even in small quantities, you can have brain inflammation and brain injury from, especially if you're genetically susceptible to not being able to excrete aluminum or mercury from the body. I think that really here, we're all different. We aren't born with the same genes. We have different epigenetic influences. We eat different things. We're in different environments. So a one-size-fits-all approach to this vaccination policy is very dangerous for some people.
Thank you, John. Jose is next. Hi, Jose. You're on the air.
Hi, Barbara. Thanks for doing what you do. My question is, do you think that these big pharma corporations have any links to the foods such as Impossible Whopper? Thank you.
Impossible Whopper. Is he talking about genetically? What is he talking about?
Well, I don't. Do you know of any links between Big Pharma and our food industry today?
Oh, yes. Big Ag and Big Pharma are definitely connected. And there's talk about using, for example, tobacco plants to make vaccines. There is a lot of association between big ag and big pharma.
Okay.
So the answer is yes.
Sue in Kansas, you're on the air.
Hi. How can I explain to someone who has not heard you speak that people who are vaccinated can still transmit?
Well, on NVIC.org, we have a whole lot of references. I mean, we reference all of our information. So I've done a number of reference commentaries on measles and pertussis and influenza, and those are probably the three that you can cite. But you're going to have to do a little research project because you can't do it in 1 minute. You can't say it in 1 minute. But the concept is that these vaccines cannot guarantee that you will be immune. And immunity can wane. In other words, you have maybe 2 to 5 years of protection, and then it wanes, and then you become susceptible again. Sometimes people don't even mount an antibody response. They get vaccinated, and they have absolutely no artificial immunity. But the point is that whether you are vaccinated or unvaccinated, you can still get sick and you can transmit sometimes without showing any symptoms or showing few symptoms. What does this do? It means that the people who are vaccinated and are transmitting are not reported to the government. The unvaccinated people who are fully expressing these symptoms in most cases, they are reported to the government. So I would encourage you to go to mbic.org and look at those commentaries and look at those references. I know it's hard to have to be a researcher, but unfortunately, that's what we have to do. We have to become educated about this subject, and the only way is to do the work.
So you do have some articles on your site, mbic.org.
Many.
Great.
Many.
Thank you, Sue. Elizabeth is our next caller. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. First of all, I want to say thank you so much for having Barbara, and thank you, Barbara, for everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
So important.
Great. Go ahead with your question or comment.
So I don't mean to sound scandalous or devious, but I'm wondering with those forms that I have three children, if when you have to fill out all these forms to say you got vaccines, et cetera, for schooling, can, and I'm not a dishonest person, but couldn't you just say that you had the vaccine without, you know, what is the repercussions of lying on that form, I guess is my question.
Well, you know, I don't ever advise lying or falsifying records. It certainly is. We are a nation of laws, and I don't think it ever, those things can come back to haunt you. I think that what we have to do is go into the legislatures, and we have to, first of all, we have to elect people who have conscience and integrity and that are not going to be bought out by pharma, and we need to make sure that these laws reflect, are the kinds of laws we want to be governed by. And so we have to do what we're doing right now. There are positive bills being introduced into these legislatures. Last year, we supported 77 bills that would expand or protect informed consent in vaccination. So, you know, the other thing is there are vaccine tracking registries. Everything is being electronically, these electronic health records, EHRs, are all hooked up. And so when you go in to get vaccinated, you're likely to be entered in to an electronic tracking system.
We're just down to seconds here, and for Elizabeth really shouldn't even know if she's required. I mean, she can just say no religious or personal exemption or conscience exemption. In her state, that may be sufficient at this point even.
Yes, it depends upon what state she lives in, but I don't ever recommend not, you know, falsifying anything ever.
Thank you. We are out of time, and wish we had time for more calls. Lines have been very busy today. Barbara, thank you so much for being with us on the broadcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Again, folks, the website nvic.org and nvicadvocacy.org. Keeping you informed, this is Crosstalk. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.